It is Locked On Jazz for the 5th of June. Is it really possible that the Jazz are better defensively with Derek Favors off the floor? Are they better with Derek Favors off the floor? Is that what yesterday said? A deep, deep, geeky dive. Plus, a throwback Tuesday, Time Machine Tuesday. Got to go to the finals. We'll do it. Coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Nice to chat with you this morning. Thanks very much for tuning in. It actually could be this afternoon. It could be a few days from now because it's a beautiful thing, this podcast world. You get to listen to it when you want it. I'm David Locke. I'm the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you all the insight and expertise, plus some geeky numbers and a look behind the curtains. All the written information, when it's published, is at LockedOnJazz.net. We're hoping to have a bunch of draft coverage coming your direction. For all of the Locked On Podcast Network sites and information, go to LockedOnSports.com. All right, so in today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai and The Advocates. Yesterday, we did this dive on Derek Favors, and we came up with this, I thought, kind of wacky numbers, and I wanted to dig back in and see what was going on. And so the big one that came out yesterday was that the Jazz are better defensively with Rudy Gobert on the floor and any stretch four than they are with Derek Favors. Okay? That was surprising. Like, that was not something that I thought we were going to see. I knew that Derek Favors' defensive numbers by himself were not great, but I didn't think that Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert together weren't going to be as good as playing with other guys. Okay, so that seemed kind of wacky. So let's go take, and so basically what we found yesterday, and so what I did is I had to go deeper. I had to find out, is there a flaw somewhere? Is there something that's wacky? Is there an outlier? Is there something with shooting that's going on? Is there a personnel issue? Like, what, why is, you know, basically it's one thing for me to present this to you guys and show it to you. But what I really am trying to do is take the next level, that if Dennis Lindsay, Walt Perrin, Dave Fredman, David Morway, Justin Zanuck looked at me and said, like, what do you think? Like, would I have enough data that I had enough guts to actually answer their question? I always wonder when I listen to talk show hosts or I read columns and things, like, would you actually say that point of view in a meeting with the front office with your job on the line? Right? Otherwise, it's pretty easy. So, if you looked at it, the three numbers we had is that in the 842 minutes Favors and Gobert played together, the Jazz were plus 148 for the season, or plus about 8 per 48 minutes and 7 per 100 possessions. Okay, I'm going to use plus 48 because when I dug into this data, I wasn't able to do 100 possessions on everything. So, we're going to use plus 48 minutes, so for an entire game. So, the Jazz were plus 8 with Favors and Gobert on the floor together for games. When Favors was on the floor by himself, the Jazz were minus 5 overall for the whole season. So basically even. And when Gobert was on the floor by himself, the Jazz were pretty awesome, plus 195 for the whole season. Okay? So in 975 minutes, which, again, I'm using plus 48 numbers, puts him at about 9.6 per 48. Okay? So the kind of find yesterday, if we use plus 48 numbers, per 48 numbers, Gobert by himself was plus 10. Favors and Gobert together were 8, and Favors by himself was even. And the defense was better when just Rudy was on the floor. So I decided to dig into that. So we're dealing, let's deal, there's a bunch of things to dig into. The first one is the 974 minutes that Rudy Gobert played without Derek Favors. What can be learned from those plus 10 per 48 minutes? So he played 97 of them. And by the way, let me back up just to give you one note. So what I was able to find, I was able to discover about all but about 50 of those minutes. Maybe a little less. All but about 50 of those minutes. Okay? 937 of the 974 minutes. So all but about 30 some of the minutes. I'm guessing that's Joe Ingles sliding down to the four somewhere. It's pretty hard for me to figure out what the combinations were on the floor. So we're close. In 97 of them were with Thabo Sefolosha as the small forward, or as the power forward. And the Jazz were plus 7 per 100 possessions, plus 10 in 97 minutes. And the defense was good. It was at 100. It was elite level. Digging deep into the numbers, is there anything wacky there? Teams really shot poorly. Now, what's interesting is that in every Rudy Gobert small lineup, teams shot considerably worse against us than they did on the Favors-Gobert lineups. Like, hugely different. Favors-Gobert, opponent's effective field goal percentage was 51%. With Rudy and Thabo, it was 47. With Rudy and Jonas, it was 48. And with Rudy and Jay, it was 46. I'm rounding numbers because I think there's a lot of numbers coming your direction. It's easier. Let me do that again. When Rudy and Derek are on the floor, this defensive masterpiece, we believe, might be, the opponent shot an effective field goal percentage of 51%. With Thabo, it was 47. With Rudy and Jonas, it was 48. And with Rudy and Jay, it was 46. Now, starters' minutes is the wild card here, right? Derek and Rudy face starters. The Jazz defensive rebounding numbers are awesome with Derek and Rudy. They are pretty good with Jay. They are terrible with Thabo as the stretch. The Jazz force a ton of turnovers with Jay Crowder at the four. The other two, they less. I'm not sure what I think's good there. I frankly sometimes think forcing turnovers gets you out of defense position. The foul rates are all wacky. The foul rates all seem too high on all these numbers whenever you start zeroing in both offensively and defensively, so I'm not sure what I can tell you on that. On the offensive side, not to anyone's surprise, but all of the small lineups are better than Derek and Rudy. So, Favors and Rudy are at 105. Rudy and Thabo's at 107. Rudy and Jonas is at 109. And Rudy and Jay is at 108. All right, let's go at least with the sample sizes aren't great. And who you're playing is different. So there's some flaws here. But I feel pretty comfortable with at least this. Contrasting Rudy on the floor with a stretch four instead of Derek, not only are they better offensively, which none of us are surprised by, you kind of take that theme out there and it's one those 105 and compared to about a 108. Okay, that's a big difference. That's from below average to upper echelon. And defensively, they're better, which is might be a better ability to switch one through four and then just keep Rudy down low. Some interest. I don't know why that is. Now, so that's really the first takeaway is when I dug deep and what I dug deep is the next kind of level of stuff is when I started kind of the one name you haven't heard here is Joe Johnson. Because early in the year, Joe Johnson was playing the stretch four. And how much does he skew the numbers? So my first big takeaway was, is it really possible? First, dig in here. Is it really possible that Rudy, with a stretch four, could be better offensively and better defensively than the Jazz playing with Rudy and Derek? Okay, that second one is a way out there comment. We've never talked about it, but on the year when Rudy's on the floor with Derek, we were at 98 defensively, and when he's on the floor by himself, he was at 97.7. So he was better when he was not on the floor. Now, Rudy and Joe Johnson played a good deal together. Rudy and Derek and Joe Johnson actually played a lot together. And the impact when you suddenly start to remove Joe Johnson gets really, really interesting for the well-being of the future of the Utah Jazz, and I have that coming up for you. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. I've been so fortunate with my relationship with Blake, who's just a great guy, that I've been able to drive a whole selection of Murdoch Hyundais. They're located in Linden and Logan and 4646 South State Street. So I just finished with the Kona, which is their small SUV, 30 miles to the gallon, competes with a Subaru Sports Track, zippy, got up and down the canyon great. Not a lot of storage space, so it's great for a one-person car. I drove the Santa Fe. I liked it so much, I bought it. Jason Creech helped us out. We bought the new three-row Santa Fe with all the safety features because July 25th, the boy turned 16, and we wanted something safe for him. I've driven the Sonata and thought it was, or I drove the Elantra and couldn't imagine a better sedan. The selection of Hyundais are incredible. They're so well-made. They drive so well. They have all the features, and they cost so much less. Check it all out at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Make sure you tell them Locke sent you. I don't think they'll throw water balloons at you. All right, so let's remove. So Joe Johnson, unfortunately, this year was really terrible. After being so great the year before, he just was terrible. My theory on this a little bit, by the way, is I do think age hit him. I mean, there's only 20 players in the history of the game that have ever played more minutes than him. The other theory I have is that when they changed the way the season started earlier, a bunch of the veterans had a hard time getting going. And then he had the wrist injury and everything else. Here's what, so the first thing we just did was we talked about Derek, Rudy without Derek. Well, does that mean that Derek, who by himself played 1,300 minutes and was negative five, is actually not as good as we think? And the answer is that Derek was actually the most negatively impacted by Joe Johnson, really in stunning fashion. So Derek Favors and Joe Johnson played 246 minutes together. And the Jazz were minus 52 in those minutes. That's scary. The offensive rating was a 97. The defensive rating was a 108. So some of Derek's numbers, the minus 5 for the season over 1,300 minutes, the without Rudy Gobert, some of that is misleading because minus 52 of that is when he's on the floor with Joe Johnson. So if you pull back out of that, Derek Favors playing by himself as the backup center without Rudy and without Joe Johnson was plus 2 per 48 minutes. He played 1,000 minutes of that, a lot. A lot. Pick and roll with him, do a lot of things. We were plus 47, plus 2. So in those backup minutes with him, we're plus 2. Does that make Derek the best backup center in the NBA? Maybe. Like that's something that I think we all kind of believe, is that if you have Derek on the roster, he's the best backup center in the NBA, and he's versatile. He can play a lot of different aspects, and so that's a huge pro. The only concern I would have, well, actually, maybe not a concern, but it's worth noting. I actually think this kind of goes into actually a bigger narrative piece that we'll continue to discuss. And actually, not a concern at all. I said that absolutely wrong. In the 1,000 minutes that Derek Favors is on the floor with a stretch floor, The Jazz effective field goal percentage is 55.1. Now, what is, let me see if I can put that into some context. Like, oh, wow, Locke said that with such emphasis. What the hell does it mean, right? I got you. Let me pull up some rankings. The Jazz for the season effective field goal percentage was a 53. Actually, I don't have the Jazz for the season. The Jazz with Favors and Gobert on the floor was a 53.4. So suddenly, you put Quinn Snyder's system together with a good scoring offensive center like Derek Favors and a stretch floor, and the effective field goal percentage goes to 55.1. Guess what? That is the Houston Rockets' second best in the NBA. Now, this, I think, is really interesting. This, to me, is an enormous... So we've got this first takeaway here that, wow, when you spread the floor and you get Favors and Gobert separated, all of a sudden, and you just have Rudy with stretch floor, the offense is a 108 for the season over 974 minutes. 108 would put you at 7th in the NBA offensively, and the defense is sub-100, it would make you number one. Whoa! Now, again, not against starters, but suddenly we have the same thing with Derek. Derek goes and plays without Rudy and without Joe Johnson, and in those 1,065 minutes, the defense was not very good, but the offense was a 55.1 effective field goal percentage. It was good offensive rebounding. It was low on the turnovers and had a decent free throw rate. The defense wasn't great. But that, I think, is pretty eye-opening. That if all of a sudden, and I'll give you the offensive and defensive numbers here in a second. I'm not quite sure why I didn't write them down. If all of a sudden we look at Derek Favors as the center with a spread floor and without Rudy Gobert, now you have a... And we're that good offensively, maybe it's even more of a discussion, and I don't know how this all works with the team long term, but that we Quinn Snyder should be spread. Because that though, Favors as your center with a stretch floor had a 110.3 offensive rating and a 106.6 defensive rating. What does that mean? 110.3 would have the Jazz, as I expected, about sixth in the league offensively in those lineups without Rudy, without Joe Johnson. Defensively, not as good. Defensively, right in the middle of the pack. Okay, so at least to me, eye-opening. Now let's flip it. Let's get Derek Favors off the floor. Let's get Rudy Gobert back on the floor, and let's get Joe Johnson off the floor. Some of these are a little complicated, by the way, because it's not, it's only counting the minutes that Joe Johnson was with the team now that I look at it. So that's that last number on Faves. Ballpark is close, but it's not perfect. So this number with Rudy will not be perfect either, because Rudy played by himself with no Favors and no Joe Johnson for 798 minutes this year. And the Jazz were plus, this is incredible, 12.2 per 48 minutes. And the offense, the defense was incredible. We've talked about this. It's kind of that group of things we talked about before. It's the, now, Rudy with Tabo, Rudy with Jonas, Rudy with Jay. This is probably too critical to Jay. But, like, are any of those really, like, starter-level stretch fours? Maybe, Jay. But, and I know that I've thrown a lot of geeky numbers at you today. But so you take Rudy by himself with no Favors and no Joe Johnson. It's only 798 minutes. It's probably not against starters. But the Jazz are plus, it's probably closing a lot of games, though. Plus 203 in 790 minutes, or plus 12.2 per 48 minutes. So there's a lot to take here. This has been an interesting process for me. I've learned a lot. On the second tier of things, what did we learn? Favors numbers by himself are negatively skewed by the 246 minutes he played with Joe Johnson. Favors with a stretch lineup, no Rudy, no Joe Johnson, stretch lineup has been great offensively. Or really good offensively. Top 6-7 caliber. Defensively, pretty average. Rudy Gobert with a spread lineup, no Faves, no Joe Johnson, unstoppable. Only 798 minutes, but per 48 minutes plus 12.2. Here's what gets interesting and really, really exciting. You take per 48 minutes, Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, and you're plus 8.4. Rudy Gobert with a stretch that's not named Joe Johnson, you're plus 9.6. Plus 10. Excuse me, you're plus 12. Whoa, whoa, whoa. My bad. Plus 12. Start that again. Faves and Gobert together, plus 8. Rudy with a stretch, not named Joe Johnson, plus 12. Which is really where the Jazz were with a good Joe Johnson the year before. And Faves by himself, you're plus 2. All of them are positive, which makes you tremendous. It's how you become the third best team in the NBA. Which is really what the Jazz were last year. Now the question is, can they get better? Do they even have a choice? Does Faves want to come back? If Faves wants to come back, the market doesn't yield him a starting spot. He wants to come back. I would say what this data shows a little bit, though, is we should be pretty willing to get to a stretch lineup, particularly either way, actually. And I don't know how the minutes then allocate to make that work, right? Because if you're playing Gobert 32, there's only 16 backup minutes for Faves. If he's playing 10 starter minutes, maybe that's enough. Maybe that's how he stays healthy at this point. But it's pretty interesting to watch, to look at, and pretty exciting to look at. And obviously we knew this. The team became great after Joe Johnson stopped playing. But Joe Johnson was really, really a negative impact on the team when he was playing. And so they're awfully good otherwise. I don't know. I know that was really geeky and really... And I hope that the last part of it where I summed up everything kind of allowed you to be able to kind of... understand all the geekiness. I'm not one who likes to just come out and tell you, hey, this is the way it is. It's not my makeup. So you're going to have to endure some of the geeky numbers so that at the end I can say, this is what I found. My takeaway on this is that the number one priority, and maybe it's Jay Crowder, I mean, you have to decide, for the Jazz is to see if they can find a really, really good bona fide stretch four. That does not preclude Derek Favors from coming back. But the numbers that I see out here lead me to think that the number one priority I would have is to find a bona fide stretch four. You decide if you think that's Jay Crowder. His shooting's not great for his career. Jay Crowder does a lot of awesome things. And if you're going to start playing a stretch... For 38 of your, if you're playing a stretch four for probably 38 of your 48 minutes, which is a little bit of what this also says, you probably need two of them. Or three by the time injuries happen. So it can be Jay Crowder and somebody else. Is that Bielitsa? Do you think he's bona fide? Bielitsa might be great if you also have Derek Favors still on your roster and you're not relying on him. And it might be great if you also have Jay Crowder in your lineup because then, it's an interesting It's an interesting situation, and it's a good one to be in. Today's show is brought to you by The Advocates. Matt over at built The Advocates. They've been doing it for 25 years, and it's a craft. They really have turned this into an art. If you get into a car accident, all accidents are different, but the process is the same. And so what Utah Advocates have done is they've taken the process and turned it into a masterpiece of efficiency. Think about it as an airplane flight. All airplane flights are different, right? But the process to get it off the ground, the process to fly it, the process to land it, those are all the same, no matter where you're taking off from and where you're ending. So what they've done is they've built a 106-step process that they've mastered over 25 years to get you good results, make sure nothing bad happens, and to treat you well. You call 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. An attorney calls you back within 60 seconds. That attorney understands who you are, what you need, what type of flight it's going to be. Maybe you need first class. Maybe you're like me. If it was me, I'd be like, just get the damn thing done. Don't bother me. Get the damn thing done. And so they put you into the case. They get it rolling. That attorney continues to communicate with you. They take you through the 106-step process. They have experts who do each of these steps along the way. And you're taken care of. It's Utah Advocates, 801-355-5550. 801-355-5550. All right, let us do Time Machine Tuesday. And it gets to be fun this time of year because, frankly, we're running out of time machines. We only have one or two teams we can go back and look at by the time we get to June 5th. So let's go look at our first NBA Finals run. Sound good? Let's do it. I'm not lying to you anymore. Like, I'm not pulling. I wasn't lying to you before, but right now I'm not. 97-98. We go to 1998, and we look to see June 5th of 98. The Utah Jazz were playing game two of the NBA Finals. The Jazz had won game one the night before. 88-85 in overtime. What a great game one of the June of the NBA. Game one of the 19, I'm off dates here, of the 99 NBA Finals. The Jazz win it in overtime. Go find the YouTube video on it. It's pretty fun. Like, just go back and look at, they have a huge, well, the whole game is up, actually, if you want to watch it on YouTube. I watched one of the highlight videos. It's a pretty fun game. I mean, it's one of those. Jazz win it in overtime. We've come off just sweeping the Lakers. The Bulls had come off a 7-game series against Indiana and were pretty tired. The place was crazy. If I remember correctly, there were like 15,000 people outside the Delta Center. We had been off forever, right? I think like 9 days. We were just dying to play again. I kind of remember this talk radio death. Stockton had 24. Malone had 21. MJ was great. We began to wonder at the end of that if the Bulls could win a road game because they'd lost, I think, 5 or 6 straight road games along the way, and we won that game in overtime. Stockton scored 7 of the 9 overtime points. So we get to game two of the NBA Finals, and if the Jets, you know, if we can win this one, yeah. And the Bulls do Bulls things. The Bulls jump up 23-20 at the end of one. They lead it 50-46 at the half, and the Jazz storm back in the third quarter to take the lead. I've got Legends Lunch today. I don't know if I want to bring this one up with Jerry. We do the Legends Lunch early in every month and sit down with Jerry and Frank Layden and Ron McBride and Mark Eaton will be there tonight. I think we'll have or today. Jordan goes not off. Like, he took 33 shots to get his 37 points. But in the fourth, the Bulls' great defense clicks in. This was another slow game. And the Jazz fall, getting outscored in game two of the really shutting down the Jazz offense, which was a terrible precursor of things to come, if you recall. The Jazz scored 15 points in that fourth quarter. Malone went 5 of 16 on the day, only took 16 shots. He had 16 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists. This was our first NBA Finals. Russell had 11. Hornacek was 7-11. Stockton only got off 5 shots. Howard Eisley got off 10. They really just stymied the whole offense. Jazz took 13 threes that night, hit 7 of them to stay in the game. But the Jazz only scored 15 points in that game 2, turned it over 20% of our possessions. It was a tough night. 4 for Malone, 3 for Russell, 3 for Hornacek, 3 for Stockton. Their long defense, I mean, that might have been the greatest defensive team in the history of the game. They just clamped down on the Jazz. The interesting one was Ostertag gave the Jazz 7 good minutes, and the bench actually was able to score a little bit. When the mailman was on the floor in that game, if I remember correctly, we just couldn't score at all. It was like we were trying to get it to him so much and just stymied us and stagnated. I don't know, you can go watch it if you want to, but I would suggest watching something else. Game 3 is an ugly one, though. Game 3 is when we score 54 points, I think, if I remember correctly. So they tied 1-1, then going back. That was a pretty disappointing bummer of a loss right there because, we thought that's the one. That's the one we would have probably needed. And, first finals experience. So the mail, tough for the mailman to start off, and then he got it going by game 5. He had that epic game 5, right? And the 83-81 win didn't cost 39 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. Really couldn't have been any better in game 5 to keep that one going. All right, that wraps it up. That is today's show. Hope you enjoyed the geeky stuff. And a little Time Machine Tuesday. Have a great one. Thanks very much. Thanks to Murdoch Hyundai and the Advocates for sponsoring today's program. If you're interested in sponsoring Locked On Jazz, you can email me at dlock09@gmail.com or at lockedonpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great one.